Erin Amulan has become an increasingly important voice in the fight against disinformation and misinformation, especially during the war from the time of October the 7th, and especially during the last 12 days or the 12-day war where Erin found herself in Israel. She joins us this morning. Erin, thank you for doing so. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And do you know what? I'm well. I have a great sense of perspective when it comes to all of these things, like how much better off I am than so many others. So, no, I'm great. Thank you. I'm back home with my little girl after a...
Hi.
Hi.
I'm on the radio. Nice to meet you.
Oh, it's okay. Awesome to meet
everybody.
You.
Okay, darling, because Mummy's going to talk about a little bit of serious stuff, so we'll just be quiet for 5 minutes.
Serious
stuff. Sometimes I do kind of think I'd rather be back in Israel.
Can't imagine why. Absolutely.
No, exactly.
It's
lovely. It's lovely to be home, and it's my fight continues, absolutely.
So obviously you landed up being caught in Israel during this time. Even given all of the reporting and the amount, I mean, you've been there before. You've followed the story closer than most. Did it change your perspective? Did it give you a different perspective having been caught up in that intense part of the fight?
Absolutely. And it's a great question. But I think even, you know, a lot of people are very used to bomb shelters and sirens in Israel. You know, it's a regular part of everyday life there, which is incredibly sad. But this was on a whole new level, even for those very well versed in it. That's something I kind of realized very early on. Such a resilient people, absolutely incredible the amount that they are forced to endure. And I kind of, you know, I it's funny, in those environments you bond with people in a way you wouldn't otherwise. And people who were staying in my hotel, I was there alone, so I was there for one night to receive an honorary doctorate, which was, you know, an incredible honor. So I had one outfit and, you know, a couple of casual things to wear around the hotel, and I was meant to fly out at 10 a.m. the next morning, and then suddenly found myself 10 days on the ground. And of course, you know, I'm my own worst enemy at times. I thought, well, since I'm here, you know, I'm watching CNN, I'm watching BBC, I'm seeing the most utterly ridiculous takes, and this attempted equivalency between the Iranian regime and Israel, and attempts at equivalency between, you know, this tit for tat, Israel attacks, then they retaliate. And I'm sitting there going, that is not the case at all. So I decided, whilst I was there, I would go out to impact sites, I would interview the president, the foreign minister, and I got this incredible access to try and tell the real story, to go out to residential buildings that had been struck and completely demolished, you know, whereas you look at what Israel had done in Iran, and it was military targets, nuclear targets, it was leaders, it was generals, it was nuclear scientists, it was terrorists, essentially. And that difference was so plain and clear. And where I was staying, you know, we have missiles coming very near us regularly, and they were not looking at military targets, I give you the nod. You know, they wanted to cause as much death and destruction as they could. So there was no equivalency. And to be given the opportunity to be on the ground myself, and I was wearing my ridiculous big glasses, and yes, I didn't have the appropriate war correspondent wardrobe, but I could not give a tinker's tuss about, I was wearing big glasses, wasn't I? But I could not care less about that, because I'm not, you know, the shops closed, the airspace closed, there was not an opportunity for me to go shopping, but I couldn't care less. The story
it was incredible,
more important, so I told it.
And it came across that way, because it was authentic, and that's what it is. You become a powerful voice in a media environment that punishes dissent to a large extent. Was there a turning point, or did you move slowly towards this position? Did you find yourself thinking, hold on, how did I get to be this?
It's another great question. Clearly, you do this job for a living very well. I've reflected a little bit in the 6 months that have passed since kind of my traditional legacy media life ended at the end of last year after 20 years. And I looked at October 7 and what occurred on that day, and it wasn't so much that moment that terrified me. It was the reaction of the world. And I went out on my once-a-week Sky News show, and I absolutely annihilated the terrorists who had carried that out, and I stood firmly with the victims of that horrific terrorist attack, not thinking for a second that it would be controversial, not thinking for a second it would put me in the minority. Everything blew up, the death threats, the blowback, it was insane. And so Howard, I went back on my show the next week and I went harder. You know, it was never a decision for me to pull back because it was considered controversial. I've been raised to do what is right, even when it is difficult, even when it is challenging. And as long as I can go to bed each night, I was about to say by myself, but my 7-year-old daughter does sleep with me every night
right,
still.
That's a good
but
thing,
as long
yeah.
as I can go to bed knowing that I am on the right side of history, knowing that I am fighting for what is right and fighting for every child in Gaza, because their enemy is not Israel. It is terrorism. It is Islamic extremism. And you know what? There was never a moment where I thought, should I pull back here? You know, am I being smart? I'm a single mom. You know, I've got to make a living. I've got a mortgage. But no, it was never even a question. And I've never doubted once that I'm on the right side of this or that my position is the noble and the decent and the one that you know, has integrity, not for a second.
So you haven't doubted it, which is incredible, because there has to have been a backlash. Have you seen I mean, obviously, besides the hate, and I see some of the abuse that you receive on social media, it's astounding. You know, I get a lot of abuse, but I think women in the role have another layer of abuse that they receive. Has the backlash been damaging to you or impactful?
Look, it not in any way in terms of hurting my feelings or upsetting me like it would have, say, 5-10 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been in the media a long time. I fought for laws in Australia that are now called Erin's Law, which is the Online Safety Act, to try and make social media a safer place for our children. Clearly, completely ineffective laws, as I'm now realizing myself. But so in terms of insulting me, insulting my looks, could not care less, and I say that would not have been the case 5 years ago, but I'm old enough and ugly enough now not to be hurt by any of that. I could not care less. What worries me is the threats to the safety of myself and my child and things that just things, and I won't go into it because she's sitting right here,
right,
but things
sure,
of that
of
nature. I'd be lying if I said they didn't worry me. But I guess when I first started in television, I was the first woman to host a different, you know, a lot of different sporting programs here in Australia. So I got a lot of backlash, but these were, you know, men who didn't think women should be involved. They weren't people who would be capable of carrying out very evil things. Now I'm in a space where the people, you know, who dislike me and disagree with me, a fair few of them are capable of awful things. So it's a different space. Yes, it's scary, but I say, pick your hard. You know, it's hard now. Yes, absolutely. And there are things I have to do that are not nice to make sure that we are safe and to, you know, to protect my child. But I look at the world in 5 years if people like me don't speak, and I'll have no hope in hell of protecting her if the world continues along this trajectory, if we don't fight back. So my number one job is to protect her, and it's very difficult for me at times. Doing something I know makes that a little bit harder now, but I know without doubt that down the track what I'm fighting for is for her future selfishly, as much as it is for every child in Israel, for every Jewish person around the world who deserves to feel safe and deserves to not be treated the way that they are treated, which is appalling.
Have you had a connection prior to all of this with the Jewish community?
Zero. I had not one Jewish, and not because I didn't want
no,
any.
No, it's just so interesting to me, because you've become an icon in the Jewish community around the world, because when somebody who isn't Jewish stands up for us, that's very different. We are told all the time, well, you're Jewish, obviously you have to say this. You must be paid by Israel, or you are Hasbara, whatever it would be.
Oh, do you know what? I would love to know who's paying people, because I would
too.
Put my hand.
Me too.
I get accused of that all the time, and now I'm worried that there is actually a really big group of people being paid.
Well, if you find out, please would you let me know.
My mum's feeling sick.
Right.
Missy Moo, Missy Moo, just one thing. But it's...
So your connection to the Jewish community?
No, I had a friend who converted, and she was kind of a school mum that I only met last year. And she, I mean, now I have many, many Jewish friends, which is lovely. But even, you know, my dad was this incredible human being. He was a retired major general and a senator. And he passed away a couple of years ago to cancer, which, you know, it hurts as acutely today as it did 2 years ago. But what a privilege I say, to feel so much pain at his loss because he was so incredible. Right, but people would stop me on the street before October 7 and say, your dad was so incredible. He, you know, he was such an ally for our Jewish community in Australia, such an ally for Israel. And I would walk away and think, you know, I would say to them, oh, that's so lovely, thank you. And I'd walk away thinking, you know, why do you need allies? I understood the Holocaust. I understood your history, but not for a second did I think, not for a second, that there was even an ounce of the kind of anti-Semitism and hate and unhinged hate that we've seen since. And then October 7 happened, and I then realized why you need allies. And I think as a child, I learned about the Holocaust, and I was as equally appalled by what had occurred as I was by people who didn't do anything. And that stuck with me for some reason. As a young child, I couldn't fathom, you know, that people would not try to help. I think it impacted me deeply. And I know right from wrong how this isn't complex. You know, this isn't grey. There's no equivalency here. This is not two nations who are having a legitimate battle over, you know, some issue. This is evil terrorists who are slaughtering and killing innocent people and still have 50 hostages. You know, this isn't grey to me. This is so obviously a case of good versus evil. I don't understand how people don't see it as clearly as I do.
And in terms of Australia, your own backyard, it is very perplexing to see some of the immediate reaction and then what has followed. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it was, as I said, Dad was in the army for many years, fought for this nation. I'm such a proud Australian. That was probably the first time I felt deeply ashamed of my country, was those images outside the Opera House before an IDF boot had hit the ground in Gaza. We had people in this country celebrating the greatest loss of Jewish life since the Holocaust. And, you know, there is a serious issue here, absolutely. But what I would say to you and your wonderful listeners in South Africa is that it does not represent the majority of people, not even close. As I said, I was a sports host, and the way that I look at this is, you know, I would cover the car racing, the V8 supercars, and there's a big race called the Bathurst 1000 that might go for 10 hours. And there might be, you know, 60 cars that are perfect and two cars crash. And the only thing I'd put in my 1:30 report at the end of the news as a reporter would be the two cars that crash.
Right, of course.
Because that's the most engaging content. Do you know what I mean? So they get the vast majority of airtime. They get a lot of attention. But the vast majority of Australians, I am really confident, are good, decent people who understand the difference here. But it's a battle, and it's young people particularly worry me, because they believe genuinely that they are on the side of humanity if they march with a Hamas flag. They believe genuinely that they are feminists, and that is terrifying.
Right.
Okay, baby.
I know we're almost done. Just one more question. One more question. That's all it is. What's next? What is next for you? I see that you've very much gone on your own, but your coverage, the support, I see, is tremendous. Your numbers are huge. Where does this go?
Oh, bless you. Look, it's one of the things that gave me a little... Hey, darling, can you just stop tapping for 2 seconds? Okay, darling. That gave me a little bit of comfort when I lost all my jobs last year, was that my stuff, you know, seemed to be getting a lot of traction and going viral on social media. And I thought, you know, straight away, I write all of my pieces, my monologues. I don't have anyone who writes or does anything for me. So I thought, you know, all they were was a studio, so I can do it myself. And that's what I'm doing now. So I've got my YouTube channel, which, you know, we've got 75,000 subscribers now.
Incredible.
Believe you me, as someone from Legacy Media for 20 years, I would have considered this very sad. I used to think going to YouTube meant you failed in real media, but I now see it very differently because I am in it. And doing just Instagram X, you know, my Instagram, I've had 9 million views over the last, you know, couple of weeks. And so I'm reaching a big audience, but look, I'm about to sign with a group in the US, which is very exciting. And oh, darling, just watch. Oh gosh, she's just scratched the car. Which is very exciting. And this is real. I'm very authentic. I'm a single mom.
Why I love this interview, because it is real. It is giving us an insight into Erin Milan that our listeners don't have. Erin, I'm going to let you go and deal with the other immediate crisis. We'll talk again. Thank you. Thank you for everything you do.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm going to send you a lot of the messages we've received, because we get so many. We've had so many
wonderful
positive messages. That is Erin.
That is really beautiful.
Thank you.
And if I might be able to say just to end, I will stand with you and your people for the rest of my life. It's a privilege to stand with such an incredible group of people. So thank you for having me and for being so patient with my beautiful little girl.